You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Eye on the Ball here at 10:30 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera. In with me is Tom Callahan behind the mic on the other side of the screen doing his social distancing work. How are you, Tom?
Got to do it, Steve. But you know what? I'm okay. I'm still here, and you're still here, and we've had a couple of good shows here. So how are we going to top it today is my question.
Good question. Yesterday was fantastic, given that we had Jason Terry and AJ Bramnick on.
Yeah, they were great together. It was a lot of fun listening to those guys.
It was going back in time 20-some years ago. We're going to go back in time again today. I have Rich Tomey, who's been a frequent guest here in the past. I've had him on maybe 2-3 times. We're going to talk real quick about his Positive Coaching Alliance organization that he's the executive director of. He's in Phoenix now, obviously the son of Coach Dick Tomey. We'll talk a little about Dick Tomey as well, given he passed away about 11 months ago, almost 11 months ago now, in May of last year. We'll talk a little quick, real quick about him and, you know, his legacy real quick. And then I have a special guest. I haven't talked to this guy in a long time, given he's been out of the U of A for a long time, but Ricky Anderson. Many people remember Ricky. It was part of the great group. In fact, I still believe the best team to ever play here at U of A, the 2001 basketball team. He was one of the guards forwards, shooting great shooter. Got lost in a mix of great recruits. So we talked about it a little yesterday with Richard Jefferson, Luke Walton, Ricky Anderson, Reuben Douglas, and I think Travis Wilson were the other ones. But part of a good group that eventually played in the Final Four National Championship game in 2001, losing to Duke in a weird game that I usually don't say this, where the refs kind of messed up a call or two. So looking forward to that.
That's always the worst, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, they're human.
Of course.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. These ones were very obvious, and I have no skin in the game. Obviously, I think that I probably would have written another book after the title, so it cost me. But it was a couple of plays very obvious. Have you ever heard about the Jason Gardner Williams Jason Gardner / Williams J Williams play? Have you heard of it? If you Google it, you'd see it.
Okay. If you refresh me, though, I may remember
so
it.
So the Arizona's first half, Jay Williams was already having two fouls on him late in the first half. Jason, very smart player, one of the best players here ever, got him to foul Jason, had Jay foul him, got over the top.
Okay.
Climbed on top of him pretty much at half court, and no call was made. When it would have been a foul, probably they go to the line, and he would have picked up his third foul in the first half. So there's structure or circumstances of having their best guard or one of the best guards of the country. Lee Duke would have been a little minimized for some of the game in the second half, but the call was never made. It was it's an iconic photo because he's all over him, like on top of him, right, piggyback, but no call was made.
And how do you miss that, Steve?
The ref was still there, too. In fact, Jay was here 2 or 3 years ago and finally asked him. A couple of people asked him, you know, okay, cuz, tell us the truth. Did you actually foul him? He says, no. And he says, what do you mean? The refs never called it. But he knows it was a foul. He said, he admitted it was a foul.
Right.
But it wasn't a foul because, well, no one called it.
But you know what? He's not wrong. It wasn't a foul because
right.
It wasn't called.
Right. It was funny because it was part of maybe a blog or a story I did on that specific play, because Duke played out of its mind, and Arizona, and this is not an excuse because, again, I had no skin in the game. Gilbert was hurt. He got hurt in a game before. His chest had been punched in, or he could hardly breathe. It was kind of move his arms. And Luke broke his thumb in a game previous too. So it was like Arizona was playing shorthanded, or at least minimized with its talent, and Duke had Boozer, Dunleavy, Williams, and they had the kid who went to San Diego, who's now like the GM, one of the great players, big guy, forward. It'll come to me. Maybe Ricky will know. So Duke was stacked, but Arizona was stacked too. And it was one of the first times where the number one seed against the other number one seed played against each other. 1 and 2 number one ranked team and number two ranked team before the season started. So kind of went true to form for the whole year. So looking forward to talking to Ricky at 6:30-ish, and then Rich Tomey here at 6:15. We already have him on the line.
Rich is already here, so if you want to grab the break, we can definitely do that.
Yeah, let's do that. We did that well yesterday, taking a long time with the guys. Let's take a quick break here on 10:30 The Voice and come back and talk to Rich Tomey. Hey, welcome back to Why on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera. And now on the phone, I have Rich Tomey. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm sure you're busy in a weird way with your Positive Coaching Alliance, kind of trying to figure things out just like the rest of us.
Yeah, it's really been weird out there, for sure. It's weird for me homeschooling my kids and holding, third through eighth grade classes.
Are you smarter than a fifth grader?
No, I am not.
Most of us aren't.
I can't even begin to help my son with math. It's just like, oh my god.
Are you dealing with the what's that thing now? Core or some kind of
Common Core?
Common Core, yeah. Uncommon Core.
Common Core, yeah. Yeah, it's so far beyond me. Our kids are, they go to a school that has a little online thing in the morning. So at least they have some kind of structure in the morning, and then my wife's mom helps with our little guy Chase, who's in third grade, so he's just all over the place. So, but it's
takes a village.
You know what? It does. And I tell you, I really, in terms of our organization, and I just want to say, I just feel really horrible for all the high school seniors and folks out there that are losing a year of sports. And I mean, just, I can't even imagine if this happened when I was a senior, not only from a sports aspect, but just losing your last year of high school is just, it's so hard to really put your mind around it, but it is what it is. And I know David Hines from the AIA, who's on our board, put out today that they've officially canceled all the high school sports for the rest of the year. So it's just, it's really tragic. And but I think at some level this will make us stronger, prepare us better for the future, and we'll come out of this stronger than we were. And it's one of those deals. So
we didn't know the severity of this 2 or 3 months ago. Obviously, we knew when it started to get bad that it was going to be bad. Little League was canceled. Soccer, youth soccer, I mean, just wiped out. Seasons wiped out. How did it affect you guys? And you might refresh me and the listeners what you do.
Yeah. So I run the Arizona chapter for Positive Coaching Alliance, and what we do is provide, workshops and training for youth coaches, high school, all the way from elementary through college, really, on just, basically teaching the life lessons through sports, learning how to parent workshops, coaches workshops, athlete workshops, just basically getting what you can get out of sports translates to real life. And honestly, a lot of the real life lessons that you learn through sports can be, we're seeing a lot of examples of people who, are taking those lessons they learned and transferring it to what's happening right now. And I think, that's something that, is very hard for us, because we have hundreds of workshops scheduled for the rest of the school year, and all those are gone. So, we're having to be real creative and kind of find new ways to keep teams together. What we're finding, though, too, is that a lot of schools and folks that we had workshops with, they're really dying for content and things to do to just try and keep their coaches, together, whether it's through, online, through Zoom or Hangouts on Google. And we're actually taking a lot of our content with our trainers that we have in place, and we're, holding workshops through Zoom with coaches so they can see each other's face and they can communicate. And because they can't be on the field, at least now they're talking about, the things that we're talking about winning and leadership and overcoming adversity and all the things that we teach. So I think, it's definitely been a different deal. It's going to be a challenge for us, for at least the next couple of months. But I think, I feel confident, you know, once this is all past us, we'll come out of this strong. And, you know, I'm a victim of it as well with our kids. I mean, they all were, you know, club swimming, and Ryan was, we were planning to go to Cooperstown this summer and him play in the 12U tournament there. Just all those things are gone. And it's just right. Like, man, it's very challenging. And, you know, a lot of our content now is also, if you go to our website, positivecoach.org, you'll see us talking about this, you know, what's happening. And because there's so many kids right now who are just sitting at home, just wallowing, and how can they use this, you know, to their advantage. And, you know, dealing with this is something no one's ever had to deal with, at least in a lot of their lifetimes. So we're bringing in a lot of our National Advisory Board people to be a part of this. So we do a lot of Facebook Lives and things online with our National Advisory Board is made up of hundreds of former and current athletes, professionals. Steve Kerr's on it. Dave Hickey's on it. We have a lot of Jerry Colangelo. We have a lot of local people, Herm Edwards. My dad was on it. You know, it's just like we have great content. We're able, since a lot of these guys are now sitting at home, sure. We're able to leverage them a little better, obviously, since they have time to do unique things that we can share with people and teams, and, you know, provide unique opportunities for people to learn from them during this time, because we're going to get out of it. It's just, you know, we're all having to kind of band together.
Right. In fact, I was just going to ask you that. I would assume that attendance has been better than ever because the people have the time on their hands now. Down the road, it's going to be better as an organization, and maybe new ideas, more ideas come into fruition.
Yeah, exactly. So we're, you know, we're definitely kind of evolving as this is going. So everything's going to virtual essentially now, and you know, that'll change once we can all get back together. But you know, it's going to be interesting once we get through this to see how the public responds to crowds and stadiums and
right.
things that are different that we're used to is not different. But now you go to Home Depot now, and people are afraid to walk next to you. You know, it's just like you got people in hazmat suits and you got guys and, you know, that aren't. And it's just like, I don't know. It's going to be a interesting case study on human culture when you look at when we come out of this. Okay, well, professional sports, college
sure.
attendance. And I think there's going to be a dip there. And,
yeah.
I really do.
No question. I was part, well, we all were part of the 9/11 tragedy in 2001.
Yeah.
It was funny or weird when I went to the Olympics in 2004, and you saw it. I mean, you know, I'm sure you saw it maybe at the airports or whatever, when we didn't see this before, where you saw armed guards. And
right.
and it was kind of just bizarre where, you know, when yeah. we could just walk around and you would see just you and me or whatever and people. And now you see people with machine guns. When I was in Greece, it was like unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, wow, this is serious stuff.
Right. Yeah. Now you're going to have hand sanitizer everywhere.
Exactly.
It's going to be unbelievable.
And the thing about yeah. it, and not to, we're all in the same boat. It's not a wealthy, not wealthy, or middle class. It's everybody's in the same boat.
Right. Yeah. It's a cultural. You know, I was talking to someone today. I've never seen in our neighborhood more families out walking and doing
right.
things outdoors. And I almost, you know, I mean, whatever you think, but I kind of feel like there's a higher power at work here or something. I don't know. It's just
yeah.
very odd.
Let me ask you.
In a weird way, but it's actually, yeah, it's just strange.
Let me ask you now, because you have, you know, your dad was like many great dads. I'm sure he took you to the park, showed you how to hit the ball, grounders, catch grounders, you know, stop grounders and shoot the hoops or whatever. I think that you'll probably see more of that, and athletes will be different because they're not going to group practice where some
right.
if the coaches don't know what they're doing, it's kind of wasted time. But now if your dad's a good coach or knows what the techniques to apply, that you'll even get better athletes. That's I could be wrong, but that's kind of how I look at it.
You know what, it's what a lot of professional athletes in college and coaches talk about always that has been lost is free play. And I think you're seeing that now. I know with my kids, I mean, we have some neighbors. We've been together for years and throughout this whole thing. So we feel like everybody's okay. And our kids don't stop playing all day outside. It's literally wiffle ball. It's
right.
Tag. It's every, you know, they're doing things that they've never done together. And it's just, it's kind of, I don't know. It's kind of fun to watch, honestly. Yeah.
How many kids do you have? Three?
I have three. So I have Taylor, who's 13. I have Ryan, who's 12, and then Chase is 9. So they're, you know, they're all great kids. They're all a little different, and
all into sports.
Taylor's a swimmer, softball player. Ryan's baseball, football. Chase is baseball, hockey right now.
So they could be playing. You know, the wiffle ball. I used to love wiffle ball, and just kind of throwing to each other, and you know, trying to hit it out of the park or whatever. And
invent games. You know, like, you know, you make stuff up. So, I mean, these are things we did as kids. You know, it's like you invent games that aren't even a real game. So I think it's fun to see that, but obviously it's sad to know why we're doing this. And but I think this will have an effect on our culture and society in some good ways. And but obviously it's painful to watch what's happening now. But I think on the other side, we'll come out stronger. Maybe we'll appreciate things better. Maybe like for our organization, people will appreciate, you know, what they're doing more and coaching more, and maybe there'll be more of a emphasis on this. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, this will all be a great lesson, but everything's a lesson, you know?
Sure.
And, I was looking today actually at a quote from, Amos Alonzo Stagg, who was, obviously a great, great coach. And my dad won the Amos Alonzo Stagg Award. So I did a lot of research on him and just curious about him. And I just love the quote that someone once said. It says, after coaching his team in the college football national championship game, Amos Alonzo Stagg was asked, what do you think of your team? And he's like, I'll tell you in 20 years. He's like, because he knew the greatest victories as a coach of young people, you know, had little to do with the scoreboard and just the impact he would have on their lives. So I think that's, you know, hopefully coaches get back to that. And I think a lot are good at that, but I know there's a lot that aren't. And so, I mean, I'm missing coaching my boys, but we have batting practice here. I have a cage in my backyard. So we, 3 days a week, we're doing BP and, you know, having our own little practice. So, I mean, we're just kind of going with the motions here.
Yeah. And we all know as former players or whatever, that it's repetition that makes you a better ball player.
Yeah, absolutely. Fundamentals and repetition. So, it's definitely a weird deal.
Have you guys as an organization already had like a group call?
Oh yeah, we do them every pretty much every week.
What's been the most enlightening things that you've picked up from some of the great people you have on those?
You know, I think the greatest thing is that, everybody seems to be just, you know, in every market, they're just rallying together. Kind of people are coming together. They know it's a hard time. And they're just finding creative ways to work with teams. And so I'll share one of the things we're doing up here with one of the – so like Cal Ripken up here in Phoenix is a local Scottsdale Cal Ripken, which like Little League, et cetera. But you know, they're very they're really on top of their coaches and they just love interacting. So one of the things they want to do is, you know, get us to do a coach's kind of Zoom call with one of our trainers. So one of our trainers is actually Jeff Roden, who is the Arizona Diamondbacks youth development guy. So he does all the Diamondbacks academies and everything. So we're going to have Jeff lead a coach's workshop on Zoom for all the Cal Ripken coaches. And on the back end of that, we're going to bring in, you know, either Torrey Lovello or one of their Diamondbacks players that will do kind of a Q&A with the coaches and talk. So those are the kind of things we're looking to do is include our local teams, and whether it's the Suns or Diamondbacks or Cardinals, and hopefully we can do some of those things with Tucson Youth Football and some of the groups we do, Tucson Unified School District down in Tucson we work with closely. So, you know, we're really looking to get, the theme is with all the chapters is let's get creative here and find ways to entice people to, we're all kind of sitting around. I mean, every day is like a Saturday right now.
It's just no, like, either it's that so or like a Monday. Weird. It's a Saturday or a Monday.
I don't know what it is. It's like my kids. Oh my gosh, it's just unbelievable. So, we're just getting creative.
Yeah. How do they feel? Because I haven't really talked to anybody who has kids like your age. Is it vacation? Is it work? Is it school? What is it?
It's a good question. I think it's like the endless. So we were on spring break. It was like,
right.
I feel like we're on an endless spring break right now. But they have to get up and do schoolwork. So it's just like, although today I will say my daughter, when they officially announced that school was canceled through the end of the year, she was really upset because she's in eighth grade. She's going into ninth grade, and she's leaving that school that she's in this year going into ninth grade. And she didn't get to see her friends or interact with this group of kids. So they're doing a lot of stuff online. Again, I think technology is going to have a huge upswing after this year. We're realizing the importance of connecting and the technology and the usefulness of it. I mean, how many people are going to want to go back to work after this, after being able to work at home?
That's a good question. Work might just say work from home, and we don't need a building.
Right.
Real quick before, because we have 2 minutes. I always wanted to talk to you about your dad. It's been less than just about 11 months. I'm sure you think about him every day. Just the impact you continue to see that he's had on people.
Yeah. It's been a heck of a year. I mean, I tell people all the time, I've never traveled more this year than I ever, imagined. But for all the right reasons. And I have a little home office here that is literally the Dick Tomey Museum of everything. So, I mean, everything he had and all the awards and footballs and, I still get calls. I talked to Donnie Salem the other day. We talked for 2 hours, and we just talked about the impact he had on his life. And I get these calls all the time, and it's just so cool to still talk to people. You get the random text at night from, like, Joe Salavea and guys that just really want to hear, just talk about him and how much they miss him. And I'm just, he's always going to be there. And I don't know if you saw it. I posted on Facebook the other day a video that they did for the Arizona Sports.
Yes, yes. In fact, I saw Dwayne Aquina, one of the great guys.
Gosh, man, that brings me to tears to hear Dwayne talk about him like that. And just Chuck Cecil. And you hear that, they can't even, put a sentence together without quivering because they're just so emotional about it. So that, when you hear that kind of real emotion, that's really why I do what I do, because I know the importance of a good coach, and he was, and he made the impact, and that's what you want out of a coach. And that's why he was such an amazing person. And I know we all have these people in our life. So, it's been an honor to be his son, and I'm so thankful to everybody out there.
Well, Rich, appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your dad. We got to go. Thanks for being on the show. Take care.
All right, buddy. See you guys.
See you. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera. And now on the phone, I have one of the good dudes I covered back in the day, 20 years ago already, Ricky Anderson. Ricky, how are you?
I'm great, Steve. I just want to say thanks so much for having me on.
Great. In fact, in reaching out to you a couple of days ago, I'm thinking, are you Rick now or Ricky? Because you're not a kid anymore.
I'm not a kid. I'm Rick. But people still call me Ricky.
Oh, who could not forget Ricky Anderson? One of the favorite players here. In fact, I'll say this, Tom, because you don't know this. To me, Ricky is probably the master of all the sports that you and I think we're good at. but aren't. He's I think, pretty much a great golfer. Ping pong, bowling, things that, I could do that. No, Ricky could do that.
Horseshoes and darts,
yes,
too, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure. Am I wrong?
I used to take Channing and Isaiah Fox and Luke and Andre to the bowling alley and give them some tips. Yeah, I was very good at horseshoes and bowling and, all of those all those fun kind of leisure activities. But yeah, just good hand-eye coordination. I was really blessed with it, and I just picked stuff up really quick. And, you know, it's, so.
And one of the trivia questions for Ricky is, he and his father are the only two father and son people to play for Lute, right?
Yeah. My father, you know, Lute started off at Marina High School in Huntington Beach, and he went over to Long Beach City College after. My dad was there in 1970. And, you know, my dad played for Lute at the community college. And then all of a sudden I got recruited by Lute, and I'm like, hey, guess who I'm playing for? I'm playing for Lute. I'm not playing for anybody else.
Right. In fact, I had JT, Jason Terry yesterday and AJ Bramlett on, and we talked about how they were seniors and a bunch of freshmen showed up. Ricky, Richard, Ruben, Luke, Travis Wilson, I think you five, right? All you five?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
a great Travis group Wilson. Of freshmen. You did give them grief. The five freshmen did give them grief, they said.
Oh, my gosh. Like, I want to give a shout out to JT and AJ because, I mean, Jason and AJ were just amazing people. You know, they brought us in, and they just every time you saw them, they had a smile on their face and they were mentoring you. But on the court, oh, they were nasty, man. AJ was a bulldog, and JT was just a killer. He could shoot the lights out, even though in practice he would shoot it 40 times. and then all of a sudden I became a better rebounder.
Well,
so no, I give my shout out to JT and AJ. They're good people.
Well,
so.
The other claim to fame, and Ricky could play. I mean, before we go there, Ricky was the star player on the other team. You know how you always the scout team. He was the star dude because they said, Ricky, you're the one that puts up 40 times because we had to guard you.
Yeah, that was kind of my because when I was redshirting my junior year. You know, I developed I improved a ton. So when I got the opportunity and be that kind of leading guy, you know, I improved my game and I would shoot it, you know, 20 times, 20, 30 times in a scrimmage with scout team. And I would just, you know, I would develop confidence, and that's really what confidence is playing with better people. And man, the guys I was playing with, 5-6 NBA guys on one team. I mean, I was really, really, really blessed and fortunate. So
what year you redshirted your junior year? What year was that? What season was that?
So that was when we had Jason Gardner was at the point guard, and then we had Gilbert Arenas at the two, and then we had Richard Jefferson at the three. And then we had big Michael Wright, rest in peace. You know, Michael was a great, great teammate. And then Lauren Woods.
And then Luke coming as a sixth guy.
Yeah, Luke, and then Justin Wessel would come in here and there. And then Eugene would come in. Eugene Eggerson.
Yeah.
Eugene was still on the team.
Right.
So
well, that was the championship game, but the runner-up game.
Yeah, that was the year Bobby passed away.
Yes,
and that gave us a lot of inspiration to, you know, for me to help the team as a redshirt person by doing the best I can on the scout team, and you know everybody else kind of stepping up their game. And if it wasn't for Mike Dunleavy Jr., we would have had our second national championship game.
Yeah, no question. In fact, I was telling Tom because he doesn't know about this, but the Jason Gardner foul, non-foul.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That changed everything. And then, you know, with Dunleavy, you know, spotting up in the corner, we were a little late to get there on the skip passes. And he hit, I think, three or four in a span of 2 to 3 minutes with about 8 minutes to go in the game. So that kind of brought us to our knees in a way where it was really disappointing and heartbreak. You know, we were heartbroken. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And he also didn't have the full guy in Gilbert. He was hurt.
He had two ribs that I thought they were broken, but I think they were two, like a flail chest, just his ribs were just really messed up. And
and Luke was hurt too.
There was, we were kind of beat up. So, I mean, excuses are excuses. I just wish we could have that game back. That's why I don't like Duke that much. Me and Luke, when we talk, we're like, oh, if Duke's on, we are not watching them. Let's just put it that way.
Right, right. No, I know you're still in Southern California, right?
Yeah, so I'm living in Los Alamitos. I got a beautiful 7-year-old daughter that I just got to tell a quick story. I'm coaching her NJB team, and we finished a month ago before this COVID-19 happened. And they never won a game, okay, all season. I was coaching, and so, no, don't dog on my coaching. They're the only all-girls team. Everybody else was all boys,
okay,
all girls. They were improving. We're up by one with 10 seconds to go in the game, and the girls were so excited to win, and this guy comes down and hits a Larry Bird follow-away to win, and the girls were crying for 30 minutes straight, and I had to hug him and embrace him, and I told him, you know what, sometimes you get knocked down, you just got to get back up. So, yeah, it was a good experience. So, yeah, I'm in Los Alamitos, and
you're a firefighter? What are you doing?
No, I'm actually teaching at Cerritos College, and I'm actually coaching basketball at Cerritos College under Russ May.
Oh, really?
Russ May.
I didn't know that.
And Tito Ortiz too. So we got a good staff. We went to the third round. We beat Ventura to get to the third round in the state, and I was really proud of our team this year too. Okay, they overachieved, but man, they gave us a lot, and you know, it's I love coaching. Just to mentor and the reward of coaching is just something special. So that's why I'm kind of back in the grind a little bit.
Do you have a little Lute in you, Ricky?
Oh geez. Lute was really, really hard on me, but I needed that. I needed that discipline from him that made me a better player. And I think that's what I'm transforming with my players now, that I'm coaching and mentoring at the community college level, because discipline's so important. You know that, Steve.
Right.
Especially nowadays, you know, there's so much stuff to do. Not now with the COVID, but I'm saying, when we're playing and everything. So, yeah, so I'm just teaching and coaching, and I'm teaching first aid and safety because I went to firefighter route.
That's yes, okay.
And I'm teaching health, and I'm also teaching yoga, actually. Can you believe that? I've been teaching it for 10 years.
You're probably still a thin, tall dude, aren't you?
Oh, they called me Big Stick. You know, Richard came up with that name my freshman year in the dorms. Richard and Luke, they saw me come out of the shower, and I was like a twig. And they were like, this is the first week. And they were like, oh, my gosh, we got to get a nickname. And then all of a sudden, 2 seconds later, Luke goes Big Stick.
Yeah.
And that was down final. So.
Right. We got to talk a lot of things. So you're close to Luke still. Imagine, look at this group. Richard, NBA guy for like 20,000 years. Luke, who's coaching in Sacramento after the Lakers. Jason was head coach at a college. I don't even know what Lauren's doing now. Unfortunately, you talked about Michael's passing. Gilbert was being Gilbert throughout the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
What a good group. What a crazy group.
You know, crazy, but we were just a very tight family. Like, everybody just got along, and there was a little chaos here and there with a few guys, but that's a team, right?
Right.
And with just the athletes, and not even the athletes, just their personalities, and everybody kind of meshed together, and it was such a surreal, you know, 5 years there, because we went through a phase, you know, after the national championship in 1997, we were getting recruited. And then all of a sudden, Richard signed, Luke signed, I signed, and then Gardner signed, and then Gilbert signed, and then Andre Iguodala signed, and Hassan Adams. So you had this kind of wave of guys signing, and it was just surreal. It really was.
97. Yeah, go ahead, Luke.
Luke, yeah. So last weekend, we were pretty bummed out, but we were planning for his 40th birthday last weekend up in Sacramento, and there was like 50 people going to, you know, fly there, and this thing, you know, this COVID happened, and you know, we couldn't do it. So that would have been great to celebrate Luke's 40th birthday. But yeah, I still keep in contact with him quite a bit. So
good. Yeah, I know he's. Not on Facebook, but maybe on Facebook. He kind of maybe, I saw him in Vegas one weekend when he got into the Hall of Fame, the Pac-12 Hall of Fame. Tell me real quick. I still think that 2001 team, I've said this publicly for a number of years, that's still the best team to ever play here, better than 88, better than 97, and better than any of the other teams. I'm sure you'll agree with me.
Yeah, you know, I agree, because if you look at our depth on the bench with Luke, Eugene, you know, we had these guys coming off the bench too that could really give us those sparks we needed. And not only our starting five, all five got signed in the NBA, but it was kind of a magical year, and just the camaraderie of that team. We came together, that locker room. I'm telling you, when Bobby passed away, that locker room it was like everybody was hugging each other at that time, and it kept going and going. And we had this feeling like we were going to, you know, do something special. And we did do something special, but not like we planned it to do. But when it comes down to it, that team, I'm telling you, with the talent they had, I mean, Gilbert as our slasher, Richard as our slasher, Jake Gardner leading the team, and then Lauren Woods, you know, just running the floor, Michael Wright posting up big, and then you had Luke coming off the bench throwing dimes to everybody and getting everybody involved, and Eugene hustling and rebound, Justin Wessel doing, I mean, just rebounding and just getting tough. So, yeah, we fell short, but that team, I agree with you, it's got to be the best. I mean, I know Jason Terry and AJ Brammett might disagree because they got a championship, but that 2001 team was, I mean, ridiculously good.
I know you have some insight to this. You could just keep it as clean as you can, but the relationship with Gene and Gilbert, because I know Gene wanted to kick crap out of him a time or two.
Oh yeah, I mean, I could tell you a story about me and Gilbert, and real quick, I'll make it quick, but I love Gilbert, man. He was just a character, man. He was fun to be around. So we were actually getting ready for our first week of practice, and you know, it was the end of the week, and it was a Saturday, and we had our usual scrimmage, our first week in I believe it's October, not our red blue scrimmage,
right.
It was kind of our scrimmage, and I was feeling good that day. I came out of the locker room like, man, I'm a sophomore, and Gilbert's a freshman. I'm like, this guy, he's not going to take my position, because I was playing the two guard at 6'9", and he's playing the two guard. And so during the scrimmage, I don't know what it was, Steve. If you put a blindfold or poured bleach in my eyes before that scrimmage, I would have still made every shot. I was on fire. I mean, I think I had 38 in the scrimmage. I checked the stats. I had 38 on Gilbert. And afterwards, Gilbert was, I mean, he was getting clowned by Eugene and everybody. And, you know, that was a good life lesson for Gilbert, just to come out next time and drop 35 on me.
right.
Next scrimmage.
But it's funny because Gilbert scared away Ruben and the kid from Iowa who transferred in.
Oh, yeah, because Gilbert had this, I mean, he had the ability to score at will. I mean, I remember one game against Stanford or somewhere, we were up or down one, and it was at home, and in the huddle, Luke was like going to draw a play, and then he stopped drawing it, erases it, and goes, get the ball to Gilbert on the right side of the block so he can post that guy up. And Gilbert just, we needed a bucket, and he scored it. So, I mean, yeah, for sure. He was an unbelievable player.
Does it feel like 20 years already?
God, I was going to bring that up, Steve. I've known you for 20 plus. It does, but it really doesn't. I feel like, you know, the way I'm living my life right now, it is going by faster because I just turned 40. But it really doesn't. It doesn't feel... I still have those great memories, and I still look back, and I still, you know, stay in touch with Justin Wessel, Jack Murphy, and Josh Pastner, and, you know, all the guys. And I look back, and I'm like, God, those memories, they just stick with you. And
it's just like, it's like it was yesterday, you know? So, no, I mean, yeah, I...
You probably look the same still, too. Skinny guy, could play.
Oh, man, I'm still the big stick. I'm only about 230 pounds. I started my freshman year at 210 pounds. Yeah, 6'9". So I everybody still calls me the big stick, and I'm still skinny.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah. So tell me, when you reflect on Arizona, what does it mean to you, the U of A and maybe the team?
What does it mean to me?
Because you were back here maybe, I don't know, 7 years ago, 5 years ago for a big celebration?
Yeah. That was, what does U of A mean to me? You know, what is, in a way, like, what does Tucson mean to me? And that's where it starts. I mean, look, you're calling me, and I'm being fortunate to be on your show. I mean, as a community, Tucson as a basketball community, especially, it's like a family, and you have so many people around that support you, and yeah, they want you to succeed, but they're just friendly, and it really, really starts with Tucson. But then it comes to, you know, what did it mean to me? And meant everything. You know, Coach O taught me discipline and character. And, you know, Luke taught me how to pass.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, just in the overall nutshell, you know, it was family, like I said earlier. And being there with Coach O, and I just got to give a shout out to my man, Jim Rosborough, because Jim, he was truly kind of a father figure to, you know, to everybody. And if you need to talk about something, he was there for you. And Jim was always joking around to Coach Roz. Coach Roz is always joking around. Oh, my God. So I don't want to tell any stories because it'll be a little inappropriate. But
well, he's doing the same, trying to cut his old jokes at Pima now. One of the assistant coaches.
Oh, yeah, our threads to him. Oh man, Steve, I can't tell you any of the threads, but yeah, we're clowning him a little bit. But Jim's always, he's always got been that soft spot where you would come to if something's wrong, if school's bothering you, if one of the players is bothering you, and he was always there to give us that comfort and that trust that every team needs. And Coach Tension was great.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach Jay John was fantastic. And, you know, yeah, Josh there, Passner too, just doing a heck of a job, and look where he is now. And then Ryan Hansen, I mean, everybody was just so connected. And then you had the managers, Jack Murphy, you had Cheeseburger, you had all these great managers that, you know, like John Castles did my film at the end of the year for my top 10 moments. And it's pretty, have you ever seen that, Steve?
No, I was going to ask you about some of that, but go ahead.
Oh, it's, yeah, the last part you can't really show on TV, but yeah, it's, no, he put together a clip for me. And just going back to just the memories, you know, I always look back and stories come up, and
some of those 10 memories, I think if I can remember correctly, this is just top of my head stuff. At the NIT in New York, you had a pretty good game on the upset, I think. And then against Wisconsin, we always talk about that game, where in Utah, where you brought the team back with a chance to win.
Yeah, against Wisconsin, I'll always remember I was catching fire. I think I had a couple buckets in a row, two or three buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And they always used to kind of heckle me on this. But I think I came down and I shot it from Hawaii. Yeah.
Yes, half court. Yes.
It was just because I was feeling so much. But
well, that was the whole thing. You hit like two, like you say, two or three buckets. They were down by five or six or whatever. You hit two buckets, brought them within a shot or two, and then you were feeling it so bad. You took like a Stephon Curry shot, and they were like, "What are you doing?"
I know. And then Coach after the game just shakes his head. I'm like, "Oh man, I could sit on that for a while." But
it was the only chance. It was the only chance.
Yeah, it was. Well, if I hit that, I think we pull that off.
Yeah, you win. Because I don't think Lauren played. That's when he was hurt, right? He was hurt. His back was out.
Yeah, Lawrence, his back was out. Correct. But no, just going back to that Florida game, that's one of my greatest, probably my best highlights, where Coach O in the timeout, we were playing Florida. They're number, I think, 2 or 1 in the country. We already beat Maryland that had Juan Dixon, Lonnie Baxter before. And Richard was in the stands. And so because he was playing for the Nets at the time, because that was his first year out. And Coach O in the timeout, there was about 14 seconds to go. He goes, Ricky, you're going to come off a curl screen and get the ball. And I look at him, I go, what? And he goes, and he just gives me a nod. Yep. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, all right, pressure. So I come off a curl from Channing, and the ball's at by the scorer's table. So took it on the sideline. I come off the curl and I get the ball and I rip it through. And I literally almost take off from the free throw line on my right foot. And a left-handed hook.
I remember that.
The Larry Bird left-handed hook, and it goes in.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I look at, and I see Coach O after the game, and he looks at me, no expression, just nods his head yes. Like, you know what? You, Luke, and Gardner, this is going to be kind of your team in a way. Like, that's how Luke was. You know, for his captains, he gave you a lot of responsibility, and he gave you just a lot of confidence. And I think that progressed with a lot of players.
He had a lot of trust in you guys to play and play it right.
Oh yeah. Oh definitely.
So
then
you,
after the game,
go ahead.
Then after the game, Richard Jefferson grabs me and Luke, and we go hang out with David Wells. So I thought it was a celebrity.
So let me say, Channing was a freshman back then, and yeah. He was a stick figure more than you. Imagine his career, how it turned out.
No, I mean, he came in the first, his career, I mean, unbelievable career, and Channing came in, and it was the first time we had pickup, and we were playing pickup ball, and, dude, we thought he was, like, the most unorthodox player. We're like, why did we recruit him? We're like, are you kidding me? He can't even, like, and then all of a sudden, when he kept playing, he was making these funny hook shots, but he was making everything, and he could shoot a little 15-footer,
right.
And
mm-hmm.
It progressed to a 20-footer, and then a 25-footer, and he just started shooting, and his career, he made a living off that three, pick and pop, and he had a great career, but Channing was a big
great guy, and not a bad career he had. Here's another guy, because when we talk about the greatest of all time players, Sean Elliott, of course, Damon Stoudemire, Bibby, guys like that, but guys who have stayed a while, and then everyone talks about Jason Gardner. He had the most minutes. He had clutch shots. He did a lot of things. Got you to the championship game. What are your thoughts on him?
Oh, just one word, just a fighter. I mean, he off the court, he was just such a gentleman and this, but on the court, he was a fighter. I mean, his competitiveness was just out the door. You're talking about he'd come down. If you're not doing something on the court, he would get in your face. Even after the game, get in your face, and we got to improve on this. He was so detailed on improving the team, and that's why I respect Jay Gardner so much, because his leadership, not only his great basketball skills, but most of all his leadership to get everybody on the same page. That's really hard to do, and he had that, and he's coaching right now. So he's got a great brain for basketball.
Right,
he's a great player.
So I asked the guys from the 97 team who was the best player on that team, and it was loaded, obviously. Bibby, Dickerson, Miles, all those guys. Oh. They said Dickerson. So with your talented group, who was the best player?
What, all my 5 years?
Yeah, why not? Because you had some great 5 years.
The best player? Oh, man. Really? I can't answer that question. I mean, there was Steve. Come on, man. Give me an easier question.
You had Gilbert. You had Richard. You had Channing. You had Luke. Hey, let me tell you something. Luke is underrated.
I got my best player.
Go.
John Ash. Johnny Ash was my best. I'm joking. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm thinking I'm thinking maybe it's a toss up between Richard. You look at Andre. When Andre,
oh, Andre,
there.
Yes, Andre and Hassan.
Andre, Richard, that's a tough question. I saw some of the
best talent there ever.
Yes, in 5 years.
In 5 years.
I would probably guess, yeah. I mean, the 97 team, they had, since 95, so 90, but they didn't have Bibby, yeah. I think those 5 years, I did see a lot of magic happen.
Right.
And I just knew out of the gate when Gilbert came in, okay, league. And then Will Bynum. Remember Will Bynum?
Yes, Will was starting with Salim, yeah.
And right. Yep, Salim, and yeah, gosh.
Not a bad run you had there, Mr. Ricky Anderson. Rick Anderson, I should say. Hey, we'll keep in touch. Steve. We'll keep in touch and we'll talk some more down the road.
Hey. I'm really fortunate. Thanks, Steve, for calling. And you guys are great.
Thanks a bunch, Rick. We'll take care.
Yeah, no problem.
Great. Thanks. That was Rick Anderson. Let's go. We got to go talk to you tomorrow, Tom. Thank you.